Then in support of this, what Jesus is right now, so here in this text, it quotes two sutras, Akshayamadi Nirdesa Sutra and the Gavaguri Sutra. Next, importance of compassion in the middle. Although having generated a mind like that one, you may enter the great vehicle. If you become discouraged upon seeing the great number of sentient beings and their bad actions, the great difficulty of the trainings, the need to do them for boundlessness and also limitless time scale, you will fall into the lesser vehicle. So out of the 22 kinds of the bodhicittas, so the first one, which is called the ground-like bodhicitta, even if you generate bodhicitta, if you are on the ground level, there's a possibility that you can degenerate this bodhicitta. So if you degenerate that, you're actually saying goodbye to bodhicitta. Then the second bodhicitta is called the bodhicitta, gold-like bodhicitta. So when you reach up, when you're able to upgrade yourself to the second level, so it is said that now there is no way by which you will ever degenerate bodhicitta in yourself. In short, you are not going to degenerate bodhicitta at that level. So it is because of this that in case if you don't appreciate yourself or try to enhance your compassion in the middle stage, which means after having degenerated bodhicitta, so then because of loosening the intensity of compassion, there's a tendency that you can say goodbye or you degenerate bodhicitta. So as such, even after having cultivated bodhicitta, you must have to emphasize or you must have to promote the intensity of compassion. So this is what is called as the importance of compassion in the middle. And the next, the importance of compassion at the end. The fact that even when the Buddhas have achieved the result, they do not abide in peace like the Hinayanists, but enact the welfare of however many sentient beings they are throughout a space, is also due to the power of their compassion. For without it, they would become like hearers. So the Buddha, after having achieved full enlightenment, he is still engrossed in working for the welfare of other beings. So that has to be done because of the moving experience of compassion. So next, the way in which other causes and effects become causes and effects of compassion, it comprises of two. With respect to the way in which the understanding as mothers through love are causes, the way in which the extraordinary attitude and generation of the mind of enlightenment are effects. If you think again and again about the suffering of a sentient being, this will generally give rise to the mere wish that it be free from suffering. However, for this mind to arise easily and for it to arise as very strong and stable, to start with, it must be a sentient being who has the aspect of being attractive and valuable. For when suffering arises for someone close to us, we cannot bear it. When suffering arises for our enemies, we enjoy it. And when suffering arises for someone who is neither a friend nor an enemy, mainly an equanimity that neglects him arises. So in this relation, let me just cite the seven cause effects. So the first one is remembering all sentient beings as having been one's mother. And next, remembering the kindness of all beings who are your mother. And third, desiring to repay for their kindness so received. And the fourth, the compassionate love. And the fifth, the attitude of great compassion. And the sixth, the mind of extraordinary attitude, which means taking the responsibility upon oneself to work for the welfare of others. And the last, the actual bodhicitta. So the first six, they are the causes, and the seventh one is the result, or the bodhicitta. So when you speak about our love, there would be two kinds. So one would be that love which desires that all sentient beings have happiness. And the second one would be that love which simply sees or perceives the beings in the light of affection. So the kind of love that is explained and presented here is the latter one, the one perceiving all beings in the light of affection. So that should serve as a cause to generate great compassion. Because of your perception of all beings in the light of great affection, so you naturally, when you see the suffering nature of the sentient beings in whom you love so much, so there naturally you will have a sense of compassion, a desire that all beings be freed of suffering. So, after the great compassion, so why does those masters include the practice of taking the responsibility? It is because even if somebody has that sense of great compassion, if you don't generate such an attitude or the desire to take the responsibility of liberating all beings from samsara upon one's own shoulder, then that person won't generate the sense of compassion, sense of altruistic amount of enlightenment or bodhicitta, because he is not ready to take the responsibility upon his own shoulder. It is because of this that after mentioning the practice of great compassion, then the practice of taking the responsibility upon oneself is deliberately included in between the great practice of great compassion and the actual bodhicitta. So out of the seven cause-effect relationship, so the first six, they are the causes, and the last one, that is the bodhicitta, the seventh one, is the result. And we should also make the distinction between mere compassion and great compassion. And the kind of great compassion that is mentioned here in the sevenfold cause-effect relationship is the great compassion which has the element of taking the responsibility of performing the welfare of all beings upon one's own shoulder. And next, the actual gradual training in these seven cause-effect relationship. So first, before we start with this practice, the practice of sevenfold cause-effect relationship, one should proceed with the meditation on equanimity, waiving all beings as equal. Because if you examine our kind of mental attitude, mindset, towards a dear one, towards an enemy or a neutral person, naturally we have a feeling of the desire to benefit someone else who is whom you see that person as dear to you, and whereas you would have a sense of joy in your enemy's suffering, and whereas you would have a sense of indifference to someone, a neutral person, undergoing suffering. So that sense of compassion or love towards your dear one and not at all towards the enemy is something biased. So this kind of affection or love would be a great obstacle to one to generating the great compassion which pervades to all other sentient beings. So some scholars or practitioners they mention about afflictive compassion.
Okay.
So I wonder if this usage of the word, or if this introduction of the word, afflictive compassion, would be appropriate. So whatever is the case, to try to speak that in a very loose way. So if you say compassion, one can have a biased compassion towards one's close ones. But if you try to be very strict in the usage of this word compassion, it should be something very genuine and something very positive and not biased. So a genuine compassion should be something that, irrespective of someone who is close ones to you or who is enemy of yours, irrespective of that, so seeing the reason or seeing the reality that the other person is desirous of happiness and not a revulsion of suffering. So on that basis, if you generate compassion, that is a genuine compassion. So if you do that, then that kind of compassion would be totally unbiased. So as such, when you speak of compassion, it should be something that should not, in which you should not involve any kind of self-interest. Rather, it should be totally directed towards the welfare for others. If that happens, then it can be something pervasive to all three of the objects, the dear ones, or enemy, or the neutral person, as your scope, as the scope of that compassion. This practice of equanimity is not included in the sevenfold cause-effect relationship. It is not counted as one of those factors. It's rather kind of preliminary practice.